Hello, everyone. You're listening to Pixel Pixel, where the X is silent, but our creaking knees most definitely aren't. This is episode 2122. I'm one of your hosts, Anne, and with me, as always, is my friend turned lover, Marcus.
Hello.
My co-host. You're also my co-host.
Yes, I guess so.
Yes. Are you creaking?
Not anymore.
Yeah, well, we've been doing a lot. This is an action-packed episode of Pixel Pixel. We've got a lot of events to report on. Firstly, though, I will say we are recording this the night of February 26th, which is literally the night before the Pokemon Day 30th anniversary live stream. And I think people are anticipating they're going to like announce the next generation or something big for the 30th anniversary. But that's why we're not talking about it. It hasn't happened yet. We'll talk about it in the next episode if it's worth reporting on. But to start, we're going to talk about all the things we've been up to in terms of life news. We've done, I guess, 3 events in the past 2 weeks, which is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
It's only February. It's not even con season yet, technically. But we did go to, I guess, what you would consider a con.
Yeah, it was a convention.
They call themselves a festival. But the weekend before last, we went to the Vintage Computer Festival in SoCal. And this was both of our first time going, but you've heard about it before, right?
Yeah, I've heard about it like maybe 3 years ago, and I've been wanting to go. I've just never gone.
Mm-hmm.
They have them in different regions of the U.S. So this is the SoCal one specifically, but they have like Midwest and East and whatnot.
And I feel like the SoCal one is relatively new because I think the 2024 shirt that I got was their first year.
Mm-hmm.
So this is only the third year, so you might have heard about it when it first started.
Yes, I guess so.
Yeah, but it was in a good location for us, like not too far away. So we went just for one day. It's a weekend event, so Saturday, Sunday, in a hotel, and we went on Sunday. And what'd you think?
I thought it was cool.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It's all the things that I like,
mm-hmm.
which is like old and obsolete technology. Primarily computers, but not only computers.
Yeah.
So I just thought it was cool because it's nice to be around people who are like into that stuff as well. And in a real intense way in some circumstances, like where people are like so devoted to a certain old computer and they're, you know, building new software for it or doing all kinds of things, you know, far beyond what I would do. But it's still cool to be in that type of thing. So I liked it. I wish they had more stuff for sale. They had like a sale area and then like exhibits. But I don't know. I would have liked to see even more for sale. Although I guess it's fine. we didn't need to buy anything more.
True. We never need to buy more. But yeah, we do.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was very community focused. So the hall where people were just sharing their cool things was the biggest one. And then there were some panels and things. We didn't go to any of that. And then there was the exhibitor hall where they had some exhibitor selling things. And the consignment room, that's what I've been trying to think about the word. So it was people, I think anyone could put something in the consignment room. So you could submit, you know, that you've got this old computer or monitor or whatever. They had all kinds of stuff. They had game things, keyboards, what have you. You bought a bunch of telephone cables for $5. So anything old you want to get rid of that was tech related, you could sign up to put in the consignment hall. And then there was also a free table, which I thought was really cute. So anyone could just come and plunk something on the table. And in fact, we did. We had a CD player that I picked up at a thrift store that doesn't allow returns for tech. I'm like, I understand, I guess, why. And I took a chance to pick this one up and hoping that it worked. And then it doesn't quite work, even though it turns on.
It does almost work. Yeah. It like turns on, but you have to like hold the thing down to
Yeah, you have to hold
play.
the. I thought it wasn't even playing sound though. It like
I don't
seems to go
remember.
on and play, but something was funny anyway. It seems like the kind of thing that a nerd could fix if they wanted
Yes.
to. So we brought that and put it on the table, and like right when we were looking at other things on the table, you said you saw someone take it away.
Yes.
So I'm glad that it could go to a good home of someone that, you know, actually cares to putter with it. And we picked up some fun things, like this old book about, I think it was like for Mac, that was I don't know, the Apple, what is it called? Apple II, one of those old computers, and it was about making like video animations or something. It has all these really fun images in it. So we picked up a couple things, some headphones, right? Which go good with your newfound interest in iPods again.
Yeah.
So you can plug them into those. Anyway, lots of fun little things. And I think, yeah, the hall where people were just showing off stuff they were doing, like either an individual or a group, and being like, here's this cool stuff I like, was definitely the highlight in terms of space, and also just to look around and see what everyone was doing. Like, there was one person who was really interested in tiny devices, and they had like a little, it was like a portable TV, handheld portable TV that they had actually hooked up a game
A
to.
Sony Watchman, I think, instead of
Okay,
like Walkman.
yeah. And then they had a magnifying glass over it so you could
Yes.
see the tiny game on the screen. And there was something else really tiny that they had that I liked. Just lots of little fun things. And then they had the booth with all the telephones that you were really into. Someone who was telling us about his Apple server. And just lots of fun stuff. Everyone had like their fun niche thing, and everyone was talking to each other, and it felt just like a very nice community event. It was nice to be there. I like being around people who have a very specific niche interest, even if I'm not super familiar with the niche. It's very fun to hear people talk about the thing they're excited about.
Yeah.
So that was cool. I'll definitely go again next year.
Yeah,
Yeah.
for sure.
So after that, the following weekend, which would have been this last weekend, we had two big events, which in retrospect maybe wasn't the best planning, but I really wanted to participate in this maker's market that I had found a couple months ago, and it was only going to be held on the Sunday. And then I looked at the calendar. Actually, I should say you looked at the calendar, because I was just like, yeah, let's do it. And then you said, and that's the weekend, we're doing something else, but we can do it anyway. We'll do it. And that something else was an Akira Yamaoka concert. And we elected to go see the one in San Diego. They also played in LA, but we went to the San Diego one, which was the night before the Maker's Market. And that's why we're tired, right?
Yeah.
Basically. So why don't you give some background? I assume our listeners are savvy enough to know who Akira Yamaoka is, but just in case.
Yeah, so Akira Yamaoka is the composer of numerous Silent Hill games. Not all of them, but many. And he was, the original composer. So Silent Hill 1, Silent Hill 2, Silent Hill 3, Silent Hill 4. You got a lot of classic songs from the franchise that are all attributed to him and his work. So obviously, I'm a big fan. I love Silent Hill series, and I love the music of Silent Hill, particularly Silent Hill 2. But I love all the soundtracks, really. Even the games I don't like, the soundtracks are still pretty good. So this is his first North American tour ever. I had seen him before. He was briefly on stage at a Video Games Live once. I've seen him at E3 many years ago when E3 was still around. But this is my first time actually seeing him perform, like seriously a whole concert. So it was cool to be able to go. I was glad we could go. We even upgraded to like the VIP thing to be able to get into the venue early and meet him and get stuff signed.
And a photo.
Yeah, and a photo. So that was great. I think that it was worth doing because, it made it a little bit better because I said that you get in early. The way that it was structured is, yeah, once you're kind of in the building and you get your picture and your signings, you're kind of free to just go to the stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the main mm-hmm. hall where the show was taking place. And we should say there were, yeah, it wasn't assigned seating. There were no seats. Yeah. It was standing general admission only. So it was a pretty small venue mm-hmm. overall. Quite small. And it's not the first time we've done standing only venues, but maybe the smallest, or not quite. I think Blusher was pretty small, mm-hmm. but relatively small. And yeah, unless you had, I guess, the VIP, or you could get Fast Pass.
Which, but even still, VIP was still in faster.
Yeah, even before Fast Pass. Yes. Yeah. So you would be the earliest people in, and you got, you know, exclusive time with the merch line, mm-hmm. with the merch store, I should say. There wasn't really a line. I think, didn't I talk to the guy who was running the merch store while we were waiting, because we ended up being last because I had to use the bathroom. Mm-hmm. And I was curious because all of the other locations on the tour had sold out of the VIP. And I can't remember. I don't think San Diego had sold out, because we bought it like mm-hmm. 2 days before. Literally, I was looking up information on Reddit because I wanted to see what people thought of the first concert in LA. And that hadn't happened yet, but somebody mentioned that they had got VIP tickets. And I was like, wait, what? Like, I didn't even realize that, because they mm-hmm. sold them separately. We bought the tickets to the concert months ago on Ticketmaster, and the VIP tickets were kind of advertised through like his personal mm-hmm. website. So it's a completely separate thing. But now I've lost my train of thought. What was I getting at?
I don't know.
You don't know. Yeah, me neither. So, yeah, I lost it.
You got in early, so you got to be in the front.
Yes, that's right. So we did the photo. Oh, no, I got there in the end. So I was asking the guy at the store how many people were there, or like what the cap was, I think. He said, oh, well, there's 37 that signed up, but something like, I don't know, a couple people didn't show up. Yes. And we were all like, damn, that sucks. You know, you pay good money and it's like a really exciting thing and not be able to go, you know, for whatever reason. It's too bad. But so there weren't that many people is what I'm getting at. There were less than 37 that were just mm-hmm. there to meet him. And then you got the free reign of the merch store and the bar and the standing room area with the stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so with all the people who were in the VIP, there was just enough room for all of us to be in the front.
Yes, right at the, what is it, the railing, whatever. Yeah. Yeah, the fence, to mm-hmm. fence us off. Yeah, so we stood right at the front. Yep. We staked out our spot.
Mm-hmm.
And we kept it the whole night. That was pretty yep. cool. Yep. I did go to the bathroom again. Why am I always going to the bathroom? But it was like right before when I thought the opening act would come on. And they came on earlier than we expected, like whole 15 mm-hmm. minutes early. I had to rush through everyone to get to the front again, but I managed.
Yep.
You have to like be ready to elbow some people. Mm-hmm. Anyway, well, you saved my spot, so thank you.
Yep.
And yeah, that was really cool. Super cool to be right next to the front, right?
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, could see him right up close.
Mm-hmm.
The only downside was he kind of staked out his spot on the stage on the opposite side. So even though he was right at the front, he wasn't right in front of us the whole time, or even in the middle. Mm-hmm. He was kind of on the far right, and we were on the left side of the stage.
Mm-hmm.
But still really great. Still could see a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he played, we learned that from the other shows, he did two shows before ours, that the set list was mostly Silent Hill, if not all Silent Hill. No, there were some other things like the Metal Gear song.
But almost all Silent Hill. Yeah.
Which I was kind of surprised by, because he has released his own music separately, and he's also touring with, oh, I forget his full name, Raj something.
Mm-hmm.
He's touring with this person who does like anime and maybe some game music, or maybe just anime.
Mm-hmm.
But they are also working on something together. Yes. So I thought they would be kind of promoting their own, what's the word? Not unique work, but their personal work rather than show or
mm-hmm.
game related
nope,
work.
Guess not.
Nope, doing the hits, which I guess you liked, right? That's mm-hmm. the best part, because I think everybody was really there for the Silent Hill music. There's so many people with like Silent Hill shirts and sweatshirts, and there was some cosplay, and honestly, it was quite fun. It was like a mini Silent Hill convention, you
Yeah.
know? Everybody was really excited and all fans and talking about it, and that was cool.
I liked it. Yeah, it was great.
And you mentioned to me that you actually really liked the singer, which was nice. It's not the original singer.
Yeah, I don't remember her name, unfortunately, off the top of my head. But the original singer and the vocal tracks for Silent Hill is Mary Elizabeth McGlynn. And she's great. Heard those songs millions of times. But I really, really liked this singer. She was like so good. I prefer her renditions. And so
Wow.
now I'm like, well, damn, because I don't think they're gonna release like
An
a tour
album,
CD.
yeah.
So you just gotta live off the like recordings,
Oh,
from the
yeah.
live show.
I didn't realize you preferred it. That's pretty cool
Yeah.
because often, you know, you have your original is always going to be the best to you. Well, yeah, she had a very impressive voice. She did some really nice versions. Now, I'm not as familiar as the originals. With the originals as you are, but I thought she was good. So she's from Spain, I think. It
Yes.
was really cute. She was like surprised that people spoke Spanish in the audience, and we're all like, yeah, you're in California. But yeah, it was very cute. And so people were like yelling things in Spanish, and then she spoke some Spanish a bit. And even sang a song in Spanish,
Yes.
which I was not sure what that was from, because it's obviously not Silent Hill, right? I think. Unless
I need
she,
to look at it again,
yeah, would,
remember?
yeah, I guess she could have done the lyrics in Spanish, which would have been cool, but yeah, I'm not sure. So don't quote us on that. But yes, they did. So what was it? MGS, Sons of
Snake
Liberty,
Eater,
Snake Eater.
Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater, and the song
Yeah.
Snake Eater.
Yes. So we knew that was coming because we saw they played it at other shows. It was so funny. She also did a little bit of piano playing herself and then played like the refrain from Two Xanarkand from Pharmacy 10, which was random, but like, okay. So it's just like, you know, some nerds nerding out and having a fun time. The opener, Raj, she has done like tons of songs for anime, as I mentioned. So Cowboy Bebop, Tales from the Abyss. And I didn't know this, but he apparently was the singer that did the original English Power Rangers theme song. So they did that with a drummer who's a Japanese woman who's apparently toured with like Ozzy Osbourne, and I can't think of the other references he made.
The man Jack Black. I was gonna be like
The
the man who
man.
did the voice of Bowser in the
Oh my
Mario
God.
movie.
Yeah. So all
But
Jack Black.
I
Yeah.
don't know why that's where my mind went,
Well, that's the
but
most important role he's done.
to
Yeah.
me.
So Tenacious D, his band. Anyway, this Japanese woman, and he was like, she's flown in from Japan. She's 68 years old, and she did the drumming for that song. It was so cool. I loved it. I really liked it. So I was like all hyped up on Power Rangers. So that was fun. And it was a nice prelude to Kiri Yamaoka coming on with his band after, and they were all very talented as well. I really liked the bassist. He was really cool.
Yeah.
He was like an older man with like really long gray hair, and everybody had like the vibe of, I remember where I think I was in the bathroom and I was hearing some staff getting ready, and they didn't, everybody, all the staff throughout the whole night were like, who's this Akira guy, you know? And I mentioned to someone at some point that, oh, it's, oh, when I was getting a drink at the bar, he was asking me about it, and I said, oh, you know, he's a composer from Japan. He did a lot of game music, and he's like, oh, like background music, and so I explained it a bit. But the girls in the bathroom were like, oh, it must be rock. Everyone really looks like rock people. I'm like, yeah, like nerds, horror game nerds. Yeah, so that was pretty funny, but it was a good time. But moral of the story: San Diego is not super close to us. It's about an hour and a half drive. We drove down, and then originally, I think when we first booked the tickets, we had this grand plan that we were going to spend the weekend in San Diego because we quite like it down there and honestly could spend more time exploring it. But because I had the craft market the next day, we drove back that night. I think the concert got done by like maybe 10:30. But by the time we got out and everything, because there was a big line and parking garage, this and that, I think with all the driving and everything, we maybe got home by 12:30, and then we were all hyped up. So I don't believe I got to bed until like 2 a.m. And then I woke up at 6 a.m. to get ready for the work. So we were dead. I was running on fumes on Sunday. But yes, the final thing we did was the Maker's Market, where I debuted Apricot Sushi Shop, which is my, I don't know, my new shop for both my work as well as vintage items that I've sourced while thrifting, you know, locally. So it's got a mix of, you know, cool jackets I found that we don't want to keep, or, you know, some fun like 90s cartoon stuff. Like I found a fun Captain Planet thermos, stuff like that, that people might like. And then also my handmade junk journals. I've gotten into making plushie taxidermy, which is where you chop off heads of plushies and put them on the little wooden boards and decorate them to look like taxidermy. And I have a few stickers as well, but I'd like to, you know, start selling more of my art and things. So basically, I've always wanted to do craft markets, and that would be really fun. Well, not just craft, any kind of like maker creative market thing. So vintage selling, that stuff too. But I like the community aspect of it. And also, you know, I have some of my own art and I would like to share, you know, things I found thrifting. So it all kind of fits nicely together. And we have been doing a lot of planning for the booth. You know, you gotta get the tent and the tables and the chairs and all that. And we made use of some things we already had, but also picked up some stuff to get the whole setup done. And it was quite fun. I enjoyed it. I didn't really sell much, but that's okay. I didn't go in planning to sell much or hoping to sell much. So, you know, it's the first one. But that was from, started at 10, I think. It went from 10 to 4 on Sunday. Mm-hmm. We went at 9 a.m. to set up. And I think it didn't take us more than a half hour to set up. And then we were just kind of hanging out. And it was fun to go around and see the other vendors and chat with people and see what they're up to. I felt like we were very lucky. We got a cute neighbor who does art. Their name is Kirby Plushie on Instagram. And, you know, we got along pretty well. They had a I Heart Yowie sticker, so I bought that from them. And then they came over to my booth and bought some things, and it was very sweet. So I like that, you know, community aspect of it a lot. I think the event overall wasn't really that busy, but I kind of knew that going in, kind of based on their, like, Instagram profile and the way they were marketing the event. I was like, I don't know. This doesn't seem like it's going to get that much traffic, but I feel like that's a good place to start. You know, it'd be too overwhelming to go to like a really hopping market and then I'd be intimidated and scared I'd screw it up or something. So it's like a test run. That's what I consider it. And you helped me out. So thank you very much for all your help up to the event and on the day of the event. Even though we were both pretty tired. I think we both took naps in the car during the day. The nice thing was we could park the car very close to the booth. It was like directly across the walkway from the booth. So we would just like disappear into the car for a bit and switch off. But yeah, it was fun. I'm going to be sort of mini soft launching online store on my coffee page, which I have been using in the past for digital things. But I'm going to add some of my handmade items to that so folks who can't come in person can purchase them online. I did do a little write-up about the event there as well, so I'll link that in the description if anyone's interested in seeing some photos of my booth or, you know, kind of the, I put a rundown of the costs and how much I made if you were curious to see the full breakdown, which is a little embarrassing, but yeah, it was fun. I'm glad we did it, even though I was so dead. I think it took me like 3 days to recover fully from that weekend. Would you say the same?
I think so.
Yeah. Would you do it again?
Ideally, no, but we could.
Yeah, we could. We know we can now. But yes, that shouldn't happen again. Okay, and we do have some news this episode. So first of all, is a piece of news that you want to talk about. So what is it?
Yes, so a game recently released on Steam that is basically just a port of an old PC adventure game. The game was originally called The Dark Eye, and it's awesome. It's like this creepy claymation adventure game that has like a focus on a couple of Edgar Allan Poe's stories. And you kind of like play through them. So it's ideal for you to like have a knowledge of some of his like most famous works, which is easy. Just by, you know, osmosis of being in the world, you might know them already. But you get to see them play out as like the protagonist, so it's cool. The thing that's weird about it on Steam is, well, The Dark Eye, since that game came out originally in, I think, like 1995, since then the name has been copywritten, I think, by like D&D or something. Something else has taken over that. So they couldn't release it with that name. So instead, they chose like the weirdest dumb name possible, which is Edgar Allan Poe's Interactive Horror 1995 Edition.
Wow.
And I think that's like, I guess it explains what it is in a sense, but wow, is that a boring name? And I feel like it's a huge disservice to the extremely cool game. I don't know, like, because of that, like, will anyone who has never played it play it? Or is it just people like me who bought it because, like, I love this game? I own it physically, but I just wanted, you know, to have it again digitally. So I have it and it's cool. And you might want to pick up the game. Just remember it's called Edgar Allan Poe's Interactive Horror 1995 edition.
What a name. They could have just called it like Edgar Allan Poe's Dark Eye or something.
Something. Unless they
Anything
couldn't say Dark
different.
Eye at
Yeah,
all.
maybe, but it's too bad.
Yeah, it's a weird one.
But very cool that it came out.
It's very random. It's a rather obscure game, and I don't know how broadly popular it is, so it's something I never would have expected.
Yeah, so that's cool. For something that maybe isn't as cool, perhaps, is the fact that, I mentioned in the intro that we've got Pokemon 30th anniversary stuff going on. And as part of the celebrations, the Pokemon Company has released Pokemon Leaf Green version and Fire Red version on the eShop. And, oh, sorry, they've announced that they're coming on the 27th, so tomorrow for Pokemon Day. So I guess by the time you listen to this, it will be out, but at the time of recording, they're actually not up yet. But the big hullabaloo is that they are digital versions that will be available standalone purchase on the eShop for $19.99 each. And they don't really have any new bells and whistles added. There will be local wireless support. And it sounds like maybe they'll be getting Pokemon Home support in the future. And notably, a lot of Pokemon games, I think we talked about this in a previous episode, you could play Pokemon in Japanese. So all the modern Pokemon games have multi-language support. These do not. So US eShop will get the English version, from what I understand. So that's also a bummer. So maybe understandably, folks are a little miffed that it's going to be $20 a piece. So if you want both of them, it's going to be $40 for
They're
these.
not selling like a bundle.
I don't think so.
That's too bad.
Yeah. Anyway, you're not going to pick them up, are you?
No, I don't care. That's a shame.
Yeah, no, it doesn't look like they're going to list them together.
Okay.
Oh, well. So I think, and there has been an update that I guess the mention of Pokemon Home was removed from the eShop pages after it was originally announced. So people saw that like the text on the eShop mentions Pokemon Home and then it doesn't anymore. So some of the arguments I've seen with people that, are defending the choice to list them for $20 each is that they add Pokemon Home support, which means you can like transfer the Pokemon from the different games, like within games that support Home. But I don't know. It's a lot of money. Well, didn't they release versions on the 3DS a while back of like red, blue, and green? No, red,
I don't
blue,
know.
and yellow.
I don't know.
I think they did. I don't remember what those were. I feel like they were only 10 at the time, but I could be wrong. Like the original Game Boy versions. Anyway, a little bummer. I won't be picking them either. But maybe if there's a cool new Pokemon game announced tomorrow, I might grab that sometime. So as for another news piece, we wanted to actually mention friend of the show Capsule J is currently doing a fundraiser for a animal rescue, Second City Canine Rescue, And he will be running the Chicago Marathon later this year, which I know he's super excited about. I heard it's really hard to get into, and we're so excited for him to be doing that.
Yeah.
So he's got this fundraiser going. I will link it in the show notes. And, you know, if you'd like to support a good cause and support his run, I think that the fundraiser will be going until the marathon later this year. And he's also tie into that is streaming Sonic games in the fundraiser. So I think the last weekend when I had my market was the first stream. And then I believe he plans to do multiple streams to promote the event. So I really think that everyone should check it out. And congratulations, Capital J, for getting into the Chicago Marathon.
Yeah.
Okay, next up is a hot topic that I'm sure everyone's waiting for us to chime in on. This has been making the rounds online. There is a New York Magazine article. And it's titled, Girls Who Love Boys Who Love Boys. When did everyone start fujoing out? And this is primarily focused on that HBO series called Heated Rivalry, which got very popular at the end of last year and continues to be very popular. You read the book.
I read the first book.
The first book in the series, which has nothing to do with the second book, apparently.
Well, I mean, they're in the same world, but Heated Rivalry is about books 2 through 5, I think.
All of them? Really?
I think the two characters who are the primary characters in the show, their story, I think, spans multiple books.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yes. But they enter in the picture in 2. Book 2.
Yes.
Okay.
Or like they're the focus in 2.
Okay. And the 2 is Heated Rivalry.
It's called Heated Rivalry.
Okay. Got it. Anyway, neither of us have seen the show. You've read you've read the first book, but we both read the article.
Mm-hmm.
Top tip for anyone listening, if you want to read the article, the website magazine is paywalled. I've heard a lot of people talking about how they can't read it. If you live in the US and have a local library, you may be able to get the magazine through your library, which we did. So we read it digitally through Libby, which was really great. So yay, libraries. So we can talk about it from a place of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you want to say about it, Marcus?
Well, I'm not the scholar in Fujoshi, but my thing, my main thought before reading the article, just in general, is why is it always a topic of what women find sexually appealing or desirous in this sense of like, well, why do they like gay men? And it's like, well, does anyone ever ask why do straight men fetishize lesbians or whatever? No.
No.
Never.
Mic drop. That's all that needs to be said. You've said it all. That's so true.
That's all I have to say.
Okay. Nothing to say except
it's just,
for that.
It's just, you know, it's like, yeah.
I think I'm a little more tuned into the conversation going on online because I go on Blue Sky regularly. And everyone I've seen has seem to be mad about the article because I think there's this immediate reaction of when something that has been relatively niche is picked up by the mainstream and then people are talking about it who don't really know about that niche or haven't been immersed in it, you know, you feel defensive and rightfully so. And also you don't want it to be misrepresented. And you know, the conversation of, is it okay for straight women to like BL or, you know, why is BL made by and for women? And I'm putting women in air quotes, or I should say, you know, like it's not necessarily now, but historically, that was kind of the assumption and what the people working within it were doing. But so people get prickly about it. Because the conversation has happened in the fandom many times, right? Many times over. So every couple of years online, there is a big argument about it. Are women fetishizing gay men, you know, or this and that. And so I think there was immediate knee-jerk reaction that this article was going to be doing the same thing or like kind of just rehashing these same arguments or representing them badly. But I would say that from reading the article, which was written by a gay man, I felt that it was actually a pretty reasonable, well-written overview of women and others who like to read male-male romance. And so they talk about Fujoshi culture, they talk about BL and Yaoi, and then they also talk about slash fiction in the West and kind of these two histories. And even though there were some errors, it was a generally pretty well thought out overview about this thing that I guess is in the broader cultural consciousness because of heated rivalry. Though what I don't personally understand, because I maybe don't really know what's going on with heated rivalry and the fans of it, is even if, as the article says, even if the majority of the people that are really freaking out positively about the show are women, what does it have to do with Fujoshi exactly? Because they're, it's not a Japanese manga. That no, it's not BL. We're not talking about BL or Yaoi. And as you said before the show, slash and male-male romance and fandoms around that have a long history in the West. So I'm not sure why we're even bringing Fujoshi or BL into it. You could have just had an article about the rich history of women enjoying slash fic or, stuff like that and tied that into heated rivalry and called it a day. So I'm not sure why we're even talking about Fujoshi to begin with, but I guess great. I don't know.
I mean, it doesn't hurt, but it is a bit random, I feel. The article was fine. I think the cover is funny of the magazine.
Yeah, I
Like
like
these
it.
two dolls with a hockey jersey top on and no bottoms. Yep. It just reminds me we need to watch the show, I guess.
I guess so. But come on. Were we not all kids once who like made our Barbies make out with each other? I don't know if I was putting male Barbies together, but I could have.
Yeah.
I don't think I was that in tune with if that at the time, but why not? And as you said, it's like never really questioned why men would be interested in watching women, either make out or have sex or be in love or any of that.
Yes,
But
it's just
just assume, why not? Like two women together, that's hot, yeah.
Well,
Whereas,
I mean, it's just misogyny and hatred and concern about women being sexual, so whatever.
I do appreciate that the author of the article did note relatively frequently that there were gay men that liked heated rivalry, there were queer people that liked heated rivalry. It's not just straight women. I think they are noting the predominance, prevalence, I guess, of women being interested in it, and then talked more broadly about, as I mentioned, the male-male slash fic and Fujoshi culture and everything. But I think the fear is that this article was just going to be like, whoa, isn't it crazy that women like this? It was not that kind of article. It was very informative and not like salacious in any way.
Yeah, I think the article you could think it would be because of the title of the article, because of the cover of the magazine, I think maybe it's even meant to elicit that thought in people's heads, and then they read it, and to be like a response to that thought, to say, no, it's fine, it's normal. Look at this rich history of women and people writing, gay male fiction and gay male comics and blah blah blah, and don't freak out about it. I don't know if there was discussion of that happening. There probably is, because anytime something popular makes its way out there like this, there's usually a lot of bad discourse. I don't know. So I feel like this article is trying to be a response to that. I'm just not aware if that discussion is happening, because I haven't seen it myself.
Yeah, all I saw was I was trying to look up actually the full title of the article on Google before the show. Some Reddit post came up about the article, and all the comments seemed to be focused on well, we've been doing this forever, which, yeah, if you read the article, it does talk about that, but, it's the immediate reaction of why is the mainstream media suddenly talking about this? Or, what business do they have talking about it? But it's a response to something that's extremely popular right now. And I mean, a very broad level, I think it's cool. Like, I never thought like New York Magazine would have an article that mentions Fujoshi in it. They also mention Otome Road, even though it's a little incorrectly, you know, and some shoujo manga, like OG shoujo manga authors are mentioned. And, you know, it's just wild. Like, I did my thesis and submitted in 2017, and 9 years later, you have this article come out. And it's just very fascinating. So I don't feel mad or anything, you know? I did nitpick the article a little just because I know about it, but I thought it was interesting. And to be on the cover, like, that's crazy in a good way. It's wild. So yeah, we gotta watch it, I guess, and see what all the hubbub's about. And then probably we'll be really critical of it, and we'll be like, yeah, we're just not gonna talk about it. It was fine or something. Which actually kind of leads into another discussion quite nicely. So we're gonna roll right into our things we've been watching and playing segment. And I'm here to say that we saw Pillion.
We sure did.
We sure did. So what did you think?
Well, I read the book. You did not. The book being called Box Hill. And so I already had a framework of what to expect in theory. Which is a book that is not happy, really. And when you were all hyped to see it, I remember you continuing to be like, it's going to be so hot, so cool. And I'm like, okay. And I was like, okay. Because I was like, well, from the book, I'm like, I haven't been on Instagram, so I don't see these ads you're seeing. But I'm like, yeah, I don't know. The book is definitely not that happy. So I guess, well, you know, it's not even that sexual. A lot of it is like not in it. So I was like, okay, but let's see it. I'm interested. So we saw it, and it's very similar to the book, except instead of being in like in the 60s or 70s, it's modern day, but you still have our protagonist, who is this kind of young adult man who is very inexperienced in life and stumbles across a sexy biker man who, for reasons unknown, wants him. And then in the course of the movie, you see their relationship and kind of how it begins and how it ends. And that's the gist.
Yes.
And I think it's a well-done movie. I don't think it is similar to the book. I don't think it's very happy. But it is, you know, a nice movie. I liked watching it. Just kind of sad in multiple parts.
Yes, I would say my number one feeling coming out of that movie was sad. And I was more sad than I expected to be. And which is funny because you told me, like, what happens in the book. I won't spoil anything, but the book seems like it would be pretty sad. But I have the perspective of being on Instagram a lot, and man, they serve me a lot of ads, and then they clocked that I guess I'm interested in it because I look at the ads, and I looked at the, you know, Pillion Instagram account, and then they keep serving me all the different interviews with Alexander Skarsgård that he's done about the film, and there are a lot of quotes and clips here and there, and he has said that he describes it as a dom rom-com or something like that, and that appeared, actually I just saw that ad today where it had that quote in it, and so I remember seeing it described as a rom-com multiple times. I will say straight up, it is not a rom-com. If anything, it's a drama with a little bit of humor in it, and I think that, I don't know that I want to say it does a disservice to the film, but it's just a very different film. Like, the marketing definitely portrays it as this fun and sexy time, and I saw it compared to Heated Rivalry. Like, they pulled a quote from a review that's like, if you like Heated Rivalry, this is going to be your next thing, and I don't think so, honestly. Having not seen Heated Rivalry, I can't say for sure, but this is like a very could be for some people very confronting look at like this fetish culture. And you know, there are some scenes that are very pretty explicit in what they're showing, you know, to people who are not familiar with certain types of fetishes, or just not expecting it. And also, Alexander Skarsgård's biker character is not really depicted as a nice or good guy, and he's a dom, but he's like kind of abusive. So we were talking about it and drawing parallels to 50 Shades of Grey, like when that came out, both the book and the film. A lot of people in the BDSM community were criticizing it, right? Because they're like, this is not a good depiction of a
Yes.
healthy dom and sub relationship, right? And that, you know, the mainstream people are gonna think that this is what it's like when it's not. I feel like in the same way, people could go into this thinking, oh, this is a rom-com and this is just what people in the queer community do, and it should be like, it's, this is how it is, and it's healthy or okay. Like, because I think the film doesn't super overtly critique it. Like, we could watch it having known or understood this culture to some degree and see it and be like, that feels like abuse. That doesn't feel great. But I don't know that people who aren't familiar with it would see it like that. What do you think?
Yeah, just like 50 Shades, same thing. If you have no awareness of it and you see this and you're like, okay, that's what it is. That's what it's like to be a submissive or whatever. And no, I would say not really. So same thing here. And more so here, because I think at least in 50 Shades, like they like sign a contract. Even though it's like a
True.
ridiculous contract. But in this one, there is never any discussion as to what the protagonist wants or what he's okay with or what he's not okay with. He just does it and or has to do it.
Yeah, he has to like learn what he's expected to do. And then when he finally kind of pushes back on it and says, I want this, then that becomes a big problem. So there was never any room for let's have a discussion about this. And like the Dom's character kind of is pushing something on him that he has no familiarity with. And ne the Dom never even like asks, like, do you know what's going on here? Or like anything. He just like starts doing all this stuff.
Yes.
It's like, whoa, okay.
And I mean, it's like in a certain, done a different way, that could be, like the dream. It's like your fantasy of the situation where it isn't explicit or officially, quote, consensual, but that's like your fantasy. You want to be pushed around, you want to be taken advantage of. And then that would be fine. But in this situation, it really doesn't seem like the protagonist is into it, especially when he's like, I want to, not do it for a day or whatever. So I think it is not a positive depiction, and the character doesn't seem to really fully be engaged or desiring
Yes,
it.
it doesn't ever seem like the protagonist is like, wow, this is really cool, and I'm really excited about all of it. It's like he's excited about Alexander Skarsgård's character because he thinks he's hot, and he just kind of follows him around and does all of these other things and gets involved with this biker community, fetish community, kind of because this other guy is there, but he never seems to be fully excited by any of it, or which, or a, I wouldn't say he's a completely unwilling participant, but he doesn't feel like an enthusiastic participant, has a
Yeah, I mean, he's getting taken advantage of because he doesn't seem to have had any relationships before. And since it's a queer relationship, he can't necessarily look to his parents for the template. It's, sometimes you as a queer person are like, well, things are different in this type of relationship. And so he could just believe, okay, well, this is what it is. And so I'm gonna go along with it because this is what I have. I don't have a choice. Which he does have a choice, but anyway, so that's what it feels like. This person is getting taken advantage of. And they like some aspects, but I don't think they like all of it. Not that we ever know. They never really say explicitly yes, no.
Yeah.
But it's how it feels. It felt like that in the book more, but it still feels like that in the movie.
Yeah.
So those are, that's all the negatives. On the positive side, I do like how they depict the rest of the biker group.
Yes, I love that.
I like, you know, because they, all of them, except for our two characters, seem to be having a lot nicer of a time.
Yeah, yeah.
They seem to be, you know, willing participants, showing, you know, positive romantic interest in their partners sometimes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's good, it's nice, it's cute, it's sweet.
Yes.
Even when it's like, you know, they're sharing and swapping partners and things are going on that might be unusual or unexpected for people who know nothing about any of this.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, it's still fun. I'm like, I'm glad that this is being depicted because it's cool.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, just the main two characters.
Yeah.
It's not great what's going on with them.
Yes, I agree. I like that they have a range of depictions of people in this biker group. I wish we saw more of them, actually. I thought they were fun. And, like, the scenes where it seems like the protagonist is having a fun time with the other subs, like, were nice to see. Or, like, I think they all show up at the apartment that the two are sharing. Mm-hmm. And the night of the protagonist's birthday. And they, like, yell happy birthday from outside and then take him and the other guy out on a trip together. And I thought that was really cute. So it's like they were showing that there was some connection there and that they were accepting of him, even though he's clearly not from this world, right? And they also like just happen to have, you know, a person who's wearing like a puppy mask. Is that what they call it? The leather puppy mask. That was really doing the full puppy play thing, like, the whole time. Like, they were doing it all the time, and it was just, like, part of that scene. It wasn't, you know, so all the things that were happening were there just presented naturally and not, like, weird or, you know, to be made fun of. And I feel like this might be one of the more mainstream depictions of this kind of fetish community, like, gay, leather, dom subs type of stuff. There were obviously different things at play, like some of them were doing the puppy play and things like that. But that aspect was very cool. And I will say other aspects I like was Skarsgård was hot. You know, he's good. He was an asshole in the film, but you know, he just played the character and that's fine. It made me want to go watch more True Blood. We watched the first season a while back and I just want to see more of him as Eric in that. That was fun. But yeah, overall, I wouldn't say it's a bad movie or even a movie that, you know, was bummed out by or like disappointed that we watched. I think it's a well-done film and I liked it, but it's just more of it's a bit of a heavier watch. And I think people should be aware of that. And I also feel like maybe it's kind of doing a disservice to be billing it so much of this dom rom-com that it could be more meaningful and poignant if people went in expecting more of what it is, which is really a young gay man discovering himself and what his boundaries and interests are and maybe what he wants out of a relationship. Because kind of the climax is where he really is kind of putting his foot down and saying, no, I want this. And what happens after that? And, you know, him coming to the point where he can, like, vocalize that. So it's not all fun and games, sadly. Mm-hmm. But still worthwhile to watch.
Yeah.
Another worthwhile watch was one that you wanted to rewatch with me. I'm not sure why this came up.
I don't remember. I think it had something to do with anatomical dummies or something.
Was it because in Hollywood Horror House, he puts the dummy in the window? That's very much like this film, which is titled Pin. And it's... Pin is a what is it, like a doctor's doll? Not doll. Doctor model? Human model that like a doctor would use?
Kind of, except I've never seen one like it before. Yeah,
a very weird one. But like a human anatomy model that the film is about are they twins?
I don't know, they're siblings at least.
Two siblings who grow up in this very strict household where their father is a physician and he has this human doll thing. It doesn't look like the normal anatomy dolls you would see in a doctor's office. It's like weirdly plushy.
It's like a full-size human without skin on it, basically.
Yeah. Named Pin. And he, like, I don't know, he's doing this thing, shtick to entertain them and other children that come to the doctor's office. And he, like, does
ventriloquism.
Ventriloquism to put on a voice to pretend that he's Pin talking to them about things. I guess to make, like, the whole doctor visit less scary and also, like, teach them stuff. And then the son develops an unhealthy obsession with Pin. And thinks that he can hear Pin when they don't know that the dad is doing the talking, but I guess the daughter figures it out. And the son, I guess, develops a situation where he feels that Pin is talking to him. Is that what you would say? So when the dad isn't around, he's hearing Pin. And then later, even Pin is talking when the dad isn't there, and we find out it's because the brother is now doing the ventriloquism, but he doesn't really recognize that he's doing it. It's like a, I don't know, split personality or bipolar or something. Like, I'm not sure. But anyway, this is based off of a book, mm-hmm. short story.
It's a book, yeah.
Book. So you read the book and then watched the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, I want you to watch this movie.
Yeah.
It's good.
I don't know. I don't know. Because I watched it years ago and read it years ago. But I always remembered it as, that's some weird movie.
Yeah, it was. I would say, to be controversial, I had more fun watching Pin than I did Pillion. But, just a more fun time, yeah. I would say. It was, a bit weird. It had a little bit of the sibling feelings that we seem to find in films a lot, where siblings have complex relationships with each other, maybe mm-hmm. too close. Like, the brother is obviously, like, obsessed with the sister and doesn't want her to get a boyfriend, and the parents die and he wants to keep her to himself type thing. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, yeah, having the obsession with the doll thing.
Yeah.
And he even likes put skin on it, doesn't he?
Yes,
so
or
that
something,
it, like, looks
yeah.
more like a man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember when the film's from?
The 80s.
80s, yeah. Anyway, I thought it was fun.
Yeah, it was cool.
Is the book worth reading?
I don't remember anymore.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Maybe sometime. Speaking of books, do you have any books that you wanted to talk about today? Or you've been chugging along reading. I think you slowed down a little because I know you started one and then you aborted it.
Yes, that was Alchemized.
Yeah.
I didn't really care for it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I read a book on poppers, which is the gay recreational drug thing.
Uh-huh.
I didn't really like that book. I read a book called Swole about, like, masculinity and muscle culture or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That was a little bit better of a book. So I don't know. It was fine. And now I'm reading some other stuff, but I'll talk about it when I finish it, maybe. Or maybe I'll just never talk about it.
Okay.
Anyway, it's fine. I'm just reading whatever
reading along.
I can.
Didn't you meet your first milestone?
Yes, I read 10 books.
Yay. And I started reading a book, actually. I started reading the book that Perfect Blue, the film by Satoshi Kon, is based on. Already it's interesting because I can see some differences, in the book. But I'll report back when I finish it.
Okay.
And we've also been playing games. I picked up a new game. Well, I should say a new game for me. I've had it in my collection a while, but it's Bayonetta Origins, Cereza, and the Lost Demon. Now, this is a Nintendo Switch title that is in the Bayonetta universe. It's about young Bayonetta, but it's very much different gameplay from the action games that 1, 2, and 3 are. This is more of like a puzzle, not platformer, just adventure puzzler game, environmental puzzle game. Mm. So you play as Bayonetta and her demon friend. what's his name? Cheshire. So if you're familiar with the Bayonetta series, she like summons demons to help her in battle. And this is when she's a baby witch and she's trying to learn how to summon demons, and she kind of accidentally summons one into her little stuffed cat, Cheshire cat thing. And so she names him Cheshire and he's stuck in this cat. And you control both of them with the analog sticks. So this, I think, is an entirely new like format. I feel like there are other games that have done it before, but I believe it's my first time playing a game like that. So you'll kind of switch between, or you can control them both simultaneously or focus on one or the other, and then also have them together. And you solve puzzles by like sending Cheshire out to do things. And then in battle, Bayonetta uses her like kind of weak level magic to bind enemies, and then you can attack them as Cheshire. And it's a very cute system. It's a little hard for me to get used to. Like, I constantly find myself being like, oh shoot, I'm like looking at Bayonetta and Cheshire is running into a wall. Like, you know. So I don't know if I'll ever get used to that. But the art style, the art direction is gorgeous. I love it. It's like this really nice painterly kind of watercolor style. It's got like a picture book kind of presentation. So there's a narrator who's narrating the whole thing, and it's just really fun to have that style presentation. It was like that in the last game I played too, the hero and the cruel king. And that, I just really like that style. So I guess I tend to gravitate toward games that have a picture book kind of theme going on. The other thing I wanted to mention is that it's quite easy. If you want it to be, you can set it on easy mode, and it has a lot of things to make it even easier if you don't really want to deal with some of the gameplay elements. Like Bayonetta, when she does her magic, a little circle appears around her and there's actually timed button presses. But if you want, you can just turn that off and it will automatically do those actions for you, so you don't have to worry about getting the timing right. So there are lots of ways to make it easier, and I saw some reviewers actually describe it as like a kid's first like puzzle type game like this. And I could definitely see how it could be an entry-level game if you set all the things the easiest and kind of put on all the guardrails. But for me, I like that because I don't have to stress about it too much. Like, I have the gameplay set to easy. I did try turning off the timing-based thing for the magic, but I found it was like too mindless. Like, I do kind of like doing the presses, and it's not that big a deal. If you miss one, you just do it again. I could see the battles getting frustrating if I was on a higher difficulty, potentially. I mean, I don't know how hard it does get, but I've only died maybe once or not at all. I think I died once, actually. I died from jumping into the water by mistake a few times. I don't know that if any enemies have actually killed me. It's about a 15-hour game, I've heard. So that seems like a good amount. And yeah, it's just very cute. I don't really know why it needed to be a Bayonetta game, but it's probably a case of like we had this game idea and we wanted to sell some copies, so we're going to slap Bayonetta on it. I don't know. But as it is, I would have been fine with it not being a Bayonetta game, but maybe there'll be some really cool revelation and I'll be glad that it was. I don't know. We'll see. As for you, you've picked up a classic again.
I don't know what it was, but like we were randomly on YouTube looking at stuff, and a video popped up from someone that neither of us have watched before, but it was a video from someone who's like obsessed with Animal Crossing talking about something called Animal Crossing Deluxe. And we watched it, and I was like, oh my God, what is this? I need this. But basically, Animal Crossing Deluxe is Animal Crossing for the GameCube, but with like heavy modifications to it to basically like add in a bunch of features from like different releases of that game, like enhancements, as well as like backporting some features, clothing, villagers, stuff from later games into this game. And generally, like adding a lot of quality of life enhancements as well that weren't present in the original. back. So it's like kind of like the ultimate version of Animal Crossing on GameCube, where it's, you know, better than what you would remember because, you know, and broadly it's the same. It's the same. Like this game could even run on a GameCube if you had a modded GameCube. So it's not something outside of what is capable of that platform. It's just that it has so much more to it now. And so I thought that was extremely cool. I've been wanting to play Animal Crossing, but not wanting to play the new one, I guess, enough.
Yeah.
So I decided to go for this one. Notably, and maybe for the best, they do not have the Animal Crossing Deluxe available for like download the patch anywhere, just like on the broad internet, like on a website. Instead, it's only available in their Discord. So, I mean, I don't love that on some, I don't love that entirely, but they're probably doing that because they don't want to get in trouble with Nintendo, and maybe it's a little bit more obscured by being tucked away in a Discord somewhere. I don't know. But anyway, so that's frustrating because I don't really like joining Discord just for like one thing, but I did, and I downloaded it. And so I think I've just put in a little bit of time in it so far, but it's just fun. Animal Crossing is fun. And for me, Animal Crossing on the GameCube is the one that really like did me in. The DS1 Wild World was also good, but like every new one, it like my interest like goes down. So, it was really GameCube version where I was like obsessed. Play it every day. Originally, I had only rented it. So that's where I learned that if you take the disc out of the GameCube, but as long as you leave the GameCube on, like the game was like fully loaded into RAM, I guess. So it would just keep, you could just keep playing. You could just keep playing with no disc in there.
That's
So
funny.
I would do that, even though it was probably not good for my GameCube to be on like constantly. But I would do that until I finally, you know, got a copy myself. But I love that game so much. We play it all of the time, every day, lonely evening on, you know, Friday night. KK Slider is my friend. You know, but it was like a great time. And so it's fun to kind of revisit it now, with all the enhancements. Because if sometimes I've been like, let me just go back and play the original one and like do that. But to go back now after playing newer ones, you're like, well, now it's kind of annoying because there's a lot of things you can't do, or a lot of things it's like, oh, well, this is dumb. Why did you have to like click things one by one? You know, why can't I just do this multi-selected stuff? So you can. Anyway, I really like it. I think it's a great mod, and I really don't understand how it was all done at all. Most mods I can understand are graphs broadly like that, so it's like this is crazy, but I really like it. But I mean, you know, if it's too old for some people still, you know, there's obviously the series continues, so you could easily get your Animal Crossing fixed with something newer on the Switch 2. But you know, it's just cool. I like it.
Yeah, it's very cool. It's been fun watching you play. I never actually played the original, so yeah, this is the best way to do it, I think.
Yes, now anyway.
Yeah, for sure. Like, seeing that, I can't think of a clear example, but like the item stuff seems like it would have been a lot more annoying in the original, or like your bells, like you pick up bells and then they don't go straight into your wallet. You've got just bags of bells in your menu and
Oh, things stack
things
now.
stack. Yeah, you wouldn't have shells or whatever stack, and multiples of anything stacking. Yeah, a lot of stuff that seems better. I thought it was really cool that they added camera angles,
Yes.
and that just, I don't know how they do that, but I mean,
Yeah.
obviously it's all there in the game, you know what I mean? The game, anyway, I clearly couldn't do it, but it's very cool, very cool. And yeah, I'll try to bring up that video and link it in the show notes, just because it's a very good overview of like all the stuff they added. I thought that was pretty cool. And like some, you know, minor but nice changes, like skin tones for the villager character and stuff like that.
Yes. Yes.
Maybe they added non-binary,
Yes,
or
they did.
Yeah, so it's just some fun, nice things that, you know, I think people who like the series would be happy to see in this. So that's cool.
Yeah.
And with that, I think we've come to the end of yet another episode of Pixel Pixel. Thank you so much for listening if you got this far, and we shall see you again in 2 weeks.